Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Tuesday, May 21st, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, Kelly. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm glad you're here with us. Also with me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, good to be here.
And yes, but no. I love having you on the show, Andrew, but sometimes we have you on to tell us about the latest terrible thing. And today's terrible thing is interesting, but not terrible for everybody. So you discovered an Instagram influencer database that got leaked online.
Yeah, there's this company, the social media marketing company based in Mumbai, India. It's called, you pronounce it Chatterbox. It's like shortened.
Okay.
But they had this database of Instagram influencers. Now, I'm not sure how many followers you need before you're considered an influencer. Mm-hmm. But basically, the database had, what was it, like 47 or 43 million records?
Mm-hmm.
49.
Oh, hey.
It contained basically all of the contact information of these people, their email address, their phone number, their bio, their profile picture. And this was stored in a database hosted by Amazon Web Services.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't think that this database is bad by itself because they're basically just using the API as it's intended.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, if you're a company wanting to partner with an influencer for your product, you might be trying to find, well, who's the best one to do this? And I think databases like these can help. But, of course, the problem is that this database wasn't secured by a password. So
it just hung out waiting for someone to find it, basically.
Yeah.
And
yeah, there's a security reach who found it, alerted TechCrunch, who wrote this article. They did reach out to this company who pulled it offline, but didn't make any further comment.
Okay. So the thing that I thought was interesting in this was not necessarily the unsecured database that we stumbled upon, because this wasn't the first, and it will by no means be the last. But the thing that was interesting to me was that it also sort of included other information, like not just here's their Instagram username and here's their profile picture and how many photos they have or how long they've been on the service or anything like that, but like how much it cost to get them to post for you, like the going rate for all of these people. And I thought that was sort of an interesting bit of information because you're sort of learning what it takes to get their attention, which was the thing that I thought was notable, because we only recently found out that this might be a job, I guess. Only because one of the things that we heard about, I think it was Lori Loughlin's daughter in that whole college admission thing, was that she earns her own income as an Instagram influencer or something. Like that was her whole job. So like that was the first time I ever heard anybody say, that's what I do. So John, you're mostly interested in the mechanics of this happening, right? That this just hung out there unsecured.
I have a question first though. Do these people who are influencers state that they're being paid for their opinions about the product, or does it appear to come from an individual who just loves the product?
Well, that was a whole other issue with Instagram. I don't know if listing it as sponsored is an actual rule on Instagram yet. I think it is on YouTube now.
Mm-hmm.
But in some cases, yeah, like these people like come off, I think, as, hey, I just found this product and I like it, without telling people that this is how much I got paid to tell you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, which is a thing that I know has happened.
In a sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. They do.
Yeah.
I have seen various levels of disclosure in some of this stuff.
Back to what you were going to ask me about originally, Kelly, it amuses and interests me that somebody would set up a database without a password on it. It makes me wonder about the kinds of people who are hired to create databases.
Mm-hmm.
and the policies that are in place and their technical ability and why they would. I've seen this happen before. Unprotected databases have appeared and been discovered. And why this happens is fascinating and alarming at the same time. How can you dream of setting up a database without controlling access to it? Unless you're just, you know, an amateur who's who shouldn't have been handling the database in the first place.
Well, the thing that it makes me wonder is much more basic than anything resembling technical prowess, which is my company did all this work and I don't want other people to just steal it. Like, not even the technical perspective of, like, it's bad if this data gets out or anything like that, but, like, it's mine and nobody else can have it but me. Like, that seems like a very basic thing that I would want to do. Like, when you leave the house and you lock the door behind you, that's my stuff. I want it to still be there when I get back. So that, to me, is the part that's interesting on a much lower level than, like, technical prowess or worrying about data security or anything like that. So I think that's... But like I said, the part that was interesting to me was, like, sort of there's going rates for people and, you know, how that all works, because I have no idea about that economy. I am not an influencer, but if anybody wants me to be, please go ahead to feel free to reach out. You can get a hold of us. You can get a hold of any of the three of us. And remember, Andrew's a millennial, so he's who you want to talk to. You can get a hold of us at TMO Daily on Twitter. You can email observations@macobserver.com, and you can leave a comment in the show notes. Now, the other thing I really want to talk about is, Andrew, you have an interesting article from this morning about terms of service and perhaps changing those terms of service that you see when you visit websites.
Yes. So this is going to be... I won't make it too long of an explanation, but I need to define some things
first. Yeah, there's some context to be had here for sure.
So basically, there's this institute called the American Law Institute. It's been around for about 100 years. They are very influential when it comes to the law, at least in the United States.
Okay.
So what they do is they publish these things called restatements of the law. And these restatements are basically guidebooks to what's called the common law. This is different than statutory law.
Okay.
So common law can be everything from, as ProPublica put it, property rights to contract disputes to who's liable when accidents happen. Now, the ALI doesn't make any laws themselves. They just, these restatements help judges make opinions on how they should approach a law, because common law is very messy and courts in each state can put their own spin on them. Okay. So they're like guidebooks. They contain like a summarization of all of the cases that went into making a law, for example, just to give judges and lawyers some broader context. Okay, still with me?
Yes.
Still with me. So what they're doing here today, they will be voting on this proposal that would change the way people agree to terms of service. So basically, this proposal would make it so that if a business has some kind of dispute in the courtroom involving terms of service, this restatement that they're voting on is basically making it a bit more lenient. It's like a rollback of consumer privacy, because you could agree to the terms of service for a website without even clicking on "I agree to the terms of service," which is, I mean, obviously pretty bad.
Yeah.
So that's basically the gist of it.
At the heart of the objection, continuing on with your summary of the article, at the heart of the objection is that weakens the consumer concept of a meeting of the minds for a contract.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's alarming about this. It's a fundamental change in the relationship between the business and the individual.
Mm-hmm. And it skips the step, because if I go to a website and suppose I don't agree with their terms, or I see that there are terms and that they are, in fact, to me, egregious, and I want to bail, then, like, I've already agreed. according to this, I've already agreed to those terms just by being on the website. I never get a chance to say, no, I'm out and nope out of whatever it is that they are presuming I've agreed to.
And it sidesteps all the mechanical protections, maybe blocking cookies or cross-site tracking. It just totally sidesteps the normal provisions that you can provide technically to avoid these kinds of problems. Is if you come to our site and read our site, you've agreed to our terms and conditions, which is arbitrary, capricious, oppressive, violates your privacy, violates common sense, historical precedent on meeting of the minds. It's just wacko. It's very alarming.
Yeah, it seems similar to what the GDPR is doing with like cookies. Like, for example, you'll see that pop up at the bottom if you visit certain websites that says, by continuing to use the site, you agree to our use of cookies. Mm-hmm. This would just make it, by continuing to use the site, you agree to our terms of service. But that goes way beyond cookies.
Yes. And that's the part that, to me, is concerning about it, is that it's not just saving you a click of having to say, okay, fine, you can have a cookie.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's generally what's happening when you go to a site and it's like, we have terms of service and we want to put a cookie on your computer, and you click okay on that thing. Generally what you're agreeing to in that little banner is the cookies, which most people don't really have an issue with for the most part. But the thing that that is worse is that the terms could be a great number of a wide variety of things, any number of any of these things.
Anything that capture from your web browser will sell.
Yeah.
We'll capture the name of your browser, your city, your name, anything we can parse from the connection. Or maybe if we can even, I don't know about this, would this violate other consumer protection laws about illegal entry into computers, but in terms of service could say that if there's a hole in your system and we can extract information from your computer, you allow us to have it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that would, that could be very bad.
Yeah, that's a scary thing. There can be so many different things in the terms of service. Like, Kelly, you told us this kind of a funny story once where this guy, as a joke, he included some funny things in his terms of service. So, for example, like, you could have in your terms of service, like, by using this website, you, like, give us your soul or, something silly like that.
Oh, yeah. You agree to mail me $20. That was the terms on the testing software I was doing.
Or you allow exclusive access to your bank account for any purpose we deem necessary.
Yeah.
Right. And, it sounds like a joking example, but there are things like that a website could put up, and I hate to be the one to break this to people, so I hope you're sitting down, but not all people who build websites and try to get people to come to them have the best of intentions toward the people who visit their websites. So it is possible that a website wouldn't feel the least bit bad about trying to get that data from you, or if you click OK, you grant us access to all your contacts. What website needs all the contacts in my contacts, et cetera, et cetera. So I think there's a whole lot there that becomes very slippery very quickly if just visiting the website makes it agreeable. Now, it's a different thing
I can see a dangerous situation, Kelly, where websites could become like apps, where if you're not paying for the app, you're basically allowing the app that's free to collect and sell anything it can grab about you.
Thank goodness we don't live in a world where there are websites that try to collect all of your personal information and do something with that data.
In the future, it could be the only websites you trust would be like the New York Times, where you have to pay for access and they make a positive affirmation about the terms of service. Mm-hmm. And everybody else is suspect, which would cast a pallor over the whole idea of Tim Berners-Lee Internet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And part of what makes this, like, is it concerning is that, like, right now there may not necessarily be a whole lot that those terms of service can do or that you can be agreeing to. Like right now, just technologically, there may not be a whole lot there that they could enforce, but it's entirely possible that that will change.
Would a judge actually read a restatement of law and come to the conclusion that you, because you clicked on a website, there was no longer a meeting of the minds necessary? I mean, that's a sea change in law.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder whether this could really catch on. The attorney general, several states attorney general, especially the one in New York, has written to the ALI commenting on this. So mm-hmm. we may not see a vote today that goes wrong. It could be they'll table it because of back pressure from states attorneys general. So right now it's just something to be aware of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like I said, you know, these are all, like, these aren't written in stone. These just help, these restatements just help judges make more informed opinions.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this isn't a set thing yet, but I think if they do approve this proposal, then it might get a little more serious.
Yeah, and that's, and it's a thing that needs approved. They didn't just come out and say, this is the way of things now. Correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
Like it requires a vote.
Okay, so they're proposing something that needs to be voted on. And there are already people commenting on this. Attorneys General, John, like you said, there are already a number of attorneys general saying that that's not how this should work, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So hopefully that will end up getting tabled because there's a whole, like, John, it's the sea change that you're talking about. So
yeah, and there's another thing, there's a ripple effect in society too. So much of the decisions that people make are taken in a very narrow view and not with understanding of how it impacts the future, what the ramifications might be. It requires a lot of experience talking to other people, consultants, consultation with colleagues, and wisdom about the side effects of decisions that are made. And I'm seeing a lot of decisions that are made with expediency and attention to just the business at hand and without regard to the side effects that may occur. And this is one of those.
Yeah, it's... I don't know what else I have to say about it at this point, to be honest, because it mostly is just... like really concerning to, like, as I sit here and think about it, I think of more and more examples of that would be terrible. And I can't find any, like, oh, well, that would be fine, you know, or yes, this would be good for me. Right. I can find lots of ways it's good for the websites. I can't find ways it's good for web surfers. And that's a very different thing.
One of the things I do on particle debris as an aside on Friday is I do a lot of reading and I find articles that I think will be of interest to the readers.
Mm-hmm.
But I also do it with a mind towards respectable publications. Over and over again, I find that sites like TechCrunch
mm-hmm.
and Macworld and other sites that are well known and respected, Washington Post, I could make a long list of sites that I've referenced in particle debris. But the point is that when I look at an article, I kind of size up the author. Have I heard of him?
Mm-hmm.
Have I heard of the website before?
Mm-hmm.
And when I read the article, I think try to put it in the context about, you know, has this person been around the block? Do we trust what he's saying?
Yeah.
And that's the filter. That's the value I bring to particle debris. And so readers should do that, too. Mm-hmm. You not just arbitrarily click on something that happens to come up on your radar and just take it for full worth.
Yeah.
You know that you can trust, and there's places that you know you should be suspicious about.
I saw the best take of that on April 1st when someone said something along the lines of basically, April Fool's Day, the day that everyone is skeptical of all the news, as they should be every day. And that's I'm the same way, John, and I'm gonna put in a not so subtle plug for our own Charlotte Henry, who is writing a book about fake news and how
it's gonna be out soon.
Yeah, her I don't buy it, I think was what it was, something like that. Anyway, Charlotte's book is coming out, and it's about exactly this topic, and I know that once it's released and everyone can read it, then we will be more than happy to have her on the show to tell us more about that. But she, I know she has like loads of filters like that that sort of go off in her head as a matter of course, where like, who is this? Like, who wrote the article? What site is it on? You know, is it a legitimate person, but the site isn't one that has a lot of credibility, or is it that the site has a lot of credibility and maybe this person is new there? And, you know, does this sound plausible? And like, you know, just sort of not believing everything you read, you know.
There's another, I want to put in another plug while we're at it. And
yes.
A plugin for Safari and other what web browsers called Web of Trust.
Okay.
W-O-T.
Yeah.
And it'll give you a rating of a website. And certainly if it's a known malicious, a warning will come up that you shouldn't continue further. You should back out.
Mm-hmm.
And generally a green circle means that the community has judged it to be trustworthy. And there's even a child safety rating, too.
Oh, that's
so
good.
So Web of Trust is a great plugin. I use it all the time.
Yeah. There are a number of sort of credibility things out there that, that you can always use for that sort of thing. John, I look forward to your review.
Actually, so speaking of terms of service, here's a fun little tidbit. Did you know that in the iTunes terms of service, and I think this applies to any Apple product, you agree not to use that product to develop, design, manufacture, or produce nuclear, missile, chemical, or biological weapons?
I remember the nuclear missile one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I remember making many jokes about what a bomb iTunes was, and oh. So, yeah. It's that. We will have more to report on this if anything changes. I will have a link to Charlotte's book in the show notes. I will have a link to, or at least some sort of information that Charlotte has for us about that. And I will also have the Web of Trust link there as well. So I will make sure that's all in there. Andrew, thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Good discussion.
Yes, John, thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me as well.
I'm glad both of you are here. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.